Welcome back to Cartels, Conspiracies, and Camarena. I'm Jack Llewellyn, and thank you for joining me as always. I am coming to you from the very snowy Denver suburbs. Thursday night and Friday, I had about 14 inches of snow in my front yard, then about 3 more inches last night, so 17, 18 inches, I think, over the last couple of days. I actually was one of the lucky ones. A few miles south of me, I have a friend who said he had about 34 inches in his driveway. So it's a great day to be inside and to do this episode with you. You're going to notice this episode is going to be published on Friday afternoon, not the normal Sunday morning. And we're going to do that for the foreseeable future. I want to see if people have more time to listen and digest the podcast over the weekend, and if it's better if it drops on a Friday afternoon. We're still going to have the newsletter on Sunday mornings, and the previous Friday's episode of the podcast will be linked in that Sunday morning newsletter. So podcast drops on Friday, newsletter on Saturday, including a link to the Friday podcast. Hopefully, again, that makes sense to people and it makes it easier for people. We'll see. We may change it up later on, but that's what we're going to do for now. All right, for the topic of the day. So May 5th, 10 days ago, marked 39 years since the recovery of the bodies of Agent Camarena and the pilot, Alfredo Zavala Avalar. When people recognized that date, and there were some very nice comments about it and about Agent Camarena in particular on social media, I started to think about how much people really know about the events that led up to the discovery of their bodies. And one of the things that I did is I went back and looked at Narcos Mexico, because that's how a lot of people seem to get their information, or at least some of their ideas on what really occurred. As I've said many, many times here, I don't necessarily fault Narcos Mexico because it was not trying to be a documentary. It was fact-based, but not everything in there was factually accurate. One of the things that's not factually accurate is the depiction of the events leading up to and the actual discovery of the bodies of Camarena and Zavala. So for that reason, today we're going to walk through those events. In some respects, it's the events around it aren't extensive. There aren't a lot of things that we're going to talk about, but they're very important and they reflect a number of the issues that were present in the investigation into Agent Camarena's abduction and after the fact. So after he was found, it was obvious that he'd been tortured and murdered. The investigation still had issues, and some of those are directly related to or exemplified by the issue surrounding the events leading up to the discovery of the bodies. All right. As I like to do, I want to credit some sources here. So a lot of information came from Jaime Kirkendall's book, and I'm going to actually read a couple of paragraphs from it later. As almost always, a lot of information comes from Desperado's Elaine Shannon's book. Some information also comes from some LA Times news articles. And then I found a couple of Mexican newspapers that were a little bit more contemporaneous that also talk about some of these events. So that's where the information comes from. Now, I'm going to note that there are minor discrepancies in some of the reports. And I say minor because there may be an hour or two difference. Did somebody arrive at 8 a.m. or 9 a.m.? To me, that's, and you'll see this, to me, that's relatively insignificant. The time doesn't necessarily matter precisely. So there are minor discrepancies, but what we're going to talk about provides or is based on the best evidence that I have taken from all of those sources. Before we talk about those events, I want to talk about two people in particular. So one is Jorge Armando Pavon Reyes. You've probably heard his name. If you watch Narcos Mexico, you saw his depiction. Pavon Reyes was a commander in the Mexican Federal Judicial Police. He also was a member of the DFS as personal detail. He was selected to oversee the investigation into the abduction and then subsequently the murder of Agent Camarena. He may have been selected, at least in part, on the recommendation of Ed Heath himself. Pavon Reyes, at the time of these events, so we're talking February, March of 1985, was 33 years of age. He had been kind of a wonder kid in the MFJP. He had associations, as I just said, with the DFS. He's probably most known in this context for the events at the Guadalajara airport on February 9, 1985. If you remember, that's the scene where Carlos Quintero is getting ready to leave on a private jet. There is a standoff of some kind between MFJP personnel led by Pavon Reyes and DEA agents. We've talked about that event in great detail. There are many, many, many incorrect versions of that confrontation at the Guadalajara airport and what led to it. We talked about how Hector Boreas gets it wrong in his book. We've talked about the fact that Narcos Mexico is not accurate in what happened there either. But the bottom line is, we know that Pavon Reyes was there and he was largely in charge of the situation. We know that he contacted the DFS. We also know, I think, that he got on a plane, spoke with Rafael Caracantero, exited the plane, said that he had seen DFS credentials from the man in the plane, and allowed the plane to leave over the protests of the DEA on site. There also are stories that Carlos Quintero paid a significant bribe to Pavon Reyes in order for him to allow Carlos Quintero's plane to leave. We'll talk about that in just a second. Pavon Reyes also plays a critical role in the events leading up to the recovery of the bodies of Camarena and Zavala at a place commonly known as Bravo Ranch. We will discuss that in just a couple of minutes. Following the events at the Guadalajara airport and Bravo Ranch, in March of 1985, Pavon Reyes was dismissed from his role with the MFJP, and he was subsequently, in 1985, charged and arrested in Mexico for attempted bribery. There is a little bit of discrepancy in some of the records of whether it was attempted bribery or bribery that he was charged with and subsequently convicted. probably doesn't matter for our purposes, but there, those that say it was only for attempted bribery note that there was no direct evidence that he actually took a bribe, though it's widely believed to have been true. Pavon Reyes was also indicted in the United States in 1987. He was convicted of the charges against him in August of 1989. He served his sentence in Mexico, was released, and it is widely believed that he died in Mexico sometime thereafter. Now, I say widely believed only because there are questions about whether there's ever been direct evidence of it, if there's been a death certificate or a body, etc. As a result, he is still listed with the DEA as a wanted person. But everybody in the know seems to say that there is really no doubt that he died in Mexico. But as I say, you can go to the DEA website and see that he is still one of the most wanted men within that agency. Okay. Second person I want to talk about is Alfredo Zavala Avalar. And we did an episode a few months ago talking about him, because when we talk about Agent Camarena and his kidnapping and his torture and his sacrifice, sometimes people forget that Zavala was right there with him for a lot of it. And his body was found along with Agent Camarena's. So I want to remind you about him and talk about the events leading up to his abduction. We're going to do it relatively quickly because, as I say, we dedicated a whole episode to him months ago. If you want more information about Zavala, go ahead and try to find that episode. Zavala Avalar was a pilot for the Mexican Agriculture Department. He also worked with the DEA, taking them on certain flights. We've talked before about the fact that the DEA was somewhat restricted by the Mexican government in where they could fly and kind of what surveillance they could do from the air. Fair to say that with Zavala's help, they being the DEA as a group, skirted some of those rules. Zavala also had his plane at a hangar at the Guadalajara airport that was relatively close to hangars used for planes, principally by Miguel Angel Felix Gallardo. So he had some information regarding their activities as well. Wednesday, February 6th, okay, Zavala pilots an aircraft that belonged to the Secretariat of Agriculture and Hydraulic Power. Okay, that's a Mexican governmental entity. He flies that plane to Durango, and they spend the night. He takes with him on this flight an auditor for the secretariat, and the auditor doesn't get his work done that day. Not in a bad way, but he has more work to do the next day, so they spend the night. And then they return the next day after the auditor had worked most of the day. They get back to the Guadalajara airport at 5 p.m.-ish. There is a woman, or a car, let's put it that way, waiting for the official, the auditor, his wife and a couple of other people in the car. It's an official agency or secretariat car. They say to Zavala, in essence, hey, we can drive you home. So he gets in the car with them. Sometime after he gets in the car, but before they go very far, and there's a little bit of discrepancy on whether they're still in the airport or just leaving the airport, again, doesn't really matter, but they're ordered off the road by two men driving a Ford LTD. The men get out of the car armed with submachine guns, and this is the important part. They ask for Zavala. Okay? They ask for him specifically. They put him in their car, and then they take the keys of the official car. And that's the last time anyone sees Zavala, right? That's when he's kidnapped. We've talked about where the last narc and Hector Boreas get this wrong before, but I want to bring up a couple of things. Number one, Zavala was not given up by Agent Camarena. Camarena did not give Zavala up. Right. Number two, contrary to what Agent Boreas says, Zavala was not, absolutely, definitively, was not kidnapped the day after Camarena. He was kidnapped the afternoon, the same day, a couple of hours later. We know that because we have the witnesses from the car. We have evidence from his family discussing when he didn't come home, when he left. We have personnel at the American consulate, including somebody who worked for the DEA at the consulate, and Agent Bachelet, who talked to the family the day of or the day after the kidnapping, where the family is talking about what happened to him and ask for help. There is absolutely no question, contrary to what Agent Boreas says, there is no question he was kidnapped the same day as Camarena. And then I want to note one other thing that I think is maybe minor to some people, but I think is critically important. If you watch The Last Narc, when they're talking about Zavala, they show a picture. They show a picture of Jaime Kirkendall, somebody in the middle, and then Titi Camarena. And they identify the person in the middle as Zavala. You know what? It's not him. It's absolutely 100% not him. It's not Zavala. How in the hell? And I know I'm going on a rant. I apologize. But how in the hell can you put out what you purport to be a documentary and get something that fundamental wrong? Okay. All right. So those are two of the key people involved in what we're going to talk about now, which is the events leading up to the recovery of the bodies of Camarena and Zavala. We're going to go back in time from the recovery of the bodies on March 5th to Thursday, February 28th. On that date, Pavon Reyes shows Jaime Kirkendall and Tony Ayala, DEA agents investigating the abduction of Agent Camarena. But he shows them an anonymous note. This note says that Camarena was being held at the Rancho El Moreno near the village of La Angostura in the neighboring state of Michoacán. The town itself is about 60 kilometers away from Guadalajara. The ranch was said to belong to a Manuel Bravo Cervantes, a former Michoacán state congressman. That's why it's later on become known as Bravo Ranch. The note also said that Camarena had been seen alive at the ranch, but that if he was not found alive, he'd be buried in the Bravo orchard. The note also said that Camarena had been kidnapped by Bravo Cervantes by accident. It was a mistaken identity. Interestingly, Pavon Reyes would allow the DEA to look at the letter, but not keep a copy of it. So that's Thursday, February 28th. Saturday, March 2nd, there had been an agreement that DEA agents and MFJP agents would go to the Bravo Ranch. Tony Ayala arrives at the MFJP offices to go to the ranch at 8 or 9 a.m. Whatever time it was, it turns out that the Mexican feds, the MFJP, had already left the offices about 2 hours earlier, and they were led by a commandant, Alfonso Velasquez Hernandez. So Ayala takes off, follows them to Michoacan. When he arrives, there had been a shootout. There were at least five people dead. There was one MFJP officer dead. MFJP had essentially said that when they arrived, they were ambushed and they returned fire. Highly suspicious. Highly suspicious. And I want you to indulge me. So I'm going to read a few paragraphs from Jaime Kirkendall's book, and maybe it'll be a little bit more than a couple of paragraphs. But what Jaime does in these page and a half, maybe two pages, is describes what really happened, not what the MFJP story was, but what it really happened. So he says, very early on the morning of March 2nd, Pavon Reyes had dispatched Velasquez and some 12 agents to the ranch to check out the information in the letter. By the way, I'm not reading it word for word, so I'm just shortening for time. But Velasquez and 12 agents go to the ranch to check out the information in the letter, you know, without being bothered to wait for the DEA agents. Jaime says that Velasquez was well known for his brutality, even amongst MFJP police. When Comandante Velasquez arrived at the farm, it was still very early, no later than 5 a.m. He was met by a couple of his agents who had spent the night in the area conducting surveillance. Present at the house were Manuel Bravo Cervantes, his wife, Celia, their son, Rigoberto, and two 12-year-old grandson cousins. Each of the child of two married sons, both of whom lived in the town of Zamora, Michoacan, about 45 minutes away. Rigoberto was sleeping downstairs in a different part of the building that was separated from the upper section by a breezeway. The Mexican feds entered first by breaking the lock on the door to enter and grabbing Rigoberto and his two children. Rigoberto, awakening from a deep sleep, did not know who the men were and shouted at his father that, quote, they were attacking the house. The federal agents removed the two young boys from the house but remained in the bedroom, using it as a vantage point against the rest of the house. Manuel Bravo Cervantes, Kirkendall says, was a crusty sort of man and didn't take much bullying. When he awakened by the shouts of his son, warning him that some men had broken into the downstairs bedroom, he, that's Bravo Cervantes reacted defensively, thinking it was the work of some of his enemies. When the men outside demanded that he surrender the house, he responded by telling them that he wanted to talk to the local authorities, whom he knew personally, since he did not believe the attackers' claims that they were part of the Federal Judicial Police. When someone fired a shot, he responded with his old shotgun that was no match for the weapons which the Mexican agents were armed with. During the first few moments of the gunfight, a young Mexican agent, Juan Manuel Esquivel, was killed, the victim of misplaced wounds from a fellow agent's automatic weapons or a shotgun blast from Manuel Bravo, a question that will never be answered. This death, though, infuriated the federal officers and made it clear to Velasquez that he must do something to mask his hasty and mistaken actions. The house was breached. Manuel Bravo Cervantes and his wife died in a hail of gunfire. Celia was shot in the back. Her son, Rigoberto, was killed downstairs. When the gunfire began, a nearby neighbor informed a relative that someone was shooting at the Bravo house. The relative immediately called the home of one of Manuel Bravo's married sons in Zamora. When the son, Hugo Bravo Segura, heard that the family home was under siege, he reacted immediately. Hugo called his brother, Manuel, who lived only a few blocks away, and told him to get his pistol because they needed to go and help the father. Manuel came to Hugo's house in the family station wagon, and they went to the ranch in about 30 minutes, only to be taken into custody by the federal agents when they arrived. They were beaten and tortured, probably never knew the fate of their parents before they met their own. The wives of the two men were worried about their sons, to be afraid of violating their husband's orders to stay home. They got together in Zamora and went to the Michoacan State Judicial Police to solicit their aid. Several police agents accompanied them to the farm where they were met by federal judicial police who were heavily armed. They disarmed the state agents and took the two women into custody. The women were placed in a small outbuilding at the farm, blindfolded, threatened, slapped around, and questioned about their knowledge of the kidnapping of Agent Camarena and Alfredo Zavala. They heard shouting and some gunfire, and once they thought they heard the voices of the husbands. The ordeal ended the next day when they were released without explanation or apology and found out that their lives had been dramatically changed. All right, so that's what Jaime Kirkendall says actually happened. He also notes that the cover-up began when the call for help was made, and now there were six dead people, five members of the Bravo family, and the MFJP agents. Okay. So that's what really happened on March 2nd. Now, if you remember, going back to this anonymous letter, it said that Camarena, if he was not found alive on the ranch, he would be found buried in the Bravo orchard. As you can imagine, after this gunfire, after the massacre at the Bravo ranch, DEA agents were after Pavone Reyes to allow them to search in the orchard for the bodies of Camarena and Zavala. Pavone Reyes finally allows this on Tuesday, March 5th. So there are some DEA agents, some laborers, they dig in the orchard, they find nothing helpful, and they leave sometime late afternoon, early evening. Okay. The exact time doesn't really matter. But about 6 p.m., a young man was walking behind the ranch. he found two plastic bags, two large plastic bags, right near the road. Okay. One of the bags had been ripped or otherwise was opened, and there were two legs exposed from one of the bags. Police then took those bodies to the Red Cross Hospital in Zamora, again, about 36 kilometers away. Pavon Reyes flies from Guadalajara to Zamora to go to the hospital, but he does not notify the DEA. In fact, Agent Kirkendall and others didn't learn about the bodies being found until Mexican TV announced it at 7 a.m. the next morning. The feds didn't actually get around to calling the DEA until about 7:45 in the morning, and even then, they had very limited information, or provided very limited information. It's generally accepted that the DEA didn't know for sure that the bodies of Cameron and Zavala were the ones that were recovered until Ed Heath and others were at the MFJP offices in Guadalajara at about 9 a.m. that morning. So think about this for a couple of minutes. You have this anonymous note, and in Desperados, Elaine Shannon says that Jaime Kirkendall, looking at it, didn't actually find it all that fascinating. Right? There, you know, at this time, this wasn't the era of social media and stuff, but the kidnapping of Agent Camarena and Zavala was in the news. It was a big deal in Mexico. It was a big deal in the United States. There were lots of anonymous tips. Lots of anonymous tips. And most of them, as is often the case, were not worth anything. So Kirkendall wasn't all that interested in it, but worth checking out. But then you have the MFJP leave without Agent Ayala. They get to the ranch, and all of a sudden there's this shootout. So Manuel Bravo Cervantes, who this anonymous note said inadvertently, accidentally kidnapped Camarena, thinking he was someone else, someone who might be able to discuss it, he's killed, along with four other family members. And then, days later, right after the DEA leaves, or shortly after the DEA leaves, two bodies are found just by the road. Just happened to be placed by the road that nobody had seen them before. Okay. What else is interesting is the note, again, had said, if Agent Camarena isn't found alive, he was buried in the orchard. Well, we know that the bodies hadn't been buried at the orchard, and in fact had been buried at La Primavera Park, just outside of Guadalajara. And we know that because in September of 1985, some DEA agents went to Primavera Park, sampled some soil, and found that the soil samples at La Primavera Park and the soil samples that were on Camarena and Zavala matched almost identically. So that says, to a high degree of certainty, that Camarena and Zavala were buried at Primavera Park, were moved from Primavera Park to the Bravo Ranch, where they were suspiciously found by, you know, a youth walking by. Hey, does anybody else look at those facts and say, it was a massive setup. It was time, under all the circumstances, for the bodies to be found. And someone or a group of someones decided that the way to do that was to alert people to the Bravo Ranch to place the bodies at the Bravo Ranch and to try to place blame for the abduction on Bravo Cervantes. Isn't that how it seems to be viewed? So what does this show us? And again, the idea here is these facts are important. It's part of the story. Narcos Mexico gets it completely wrong, which is fine. But, you know, it shows Jaime Kirkendall running up and finding the bodies himself and stuff. And that's just not how it happened. So I wanted to clear that up. But what this also shows is the incredible relationship between the MFJP, including but not limited to Pavon Reyes, and whoever was involved in the kidnapping of Camarena and Zavala. And that relationship affected absolutely everything that happened between the time Agent Camarena was picked up outside the American consulate, Captain Zavala was picked up at the Guadalajara airport, until their bodies were found on March 5th. And I submit to you that influence, which impeded the investigation, further impeded the investigation far longer than just that time period. It extended much beyond the recovery of the bodies of Camarena and Zavala. And again, just because I want to, let me also go back and say, in addition to the last or to Narcos Mexico not getting the facts 100% correct, neither did the last narc. Neither does Hector Boreas. And that, my friends, is significant. If you're going to trust someone who says they know what really happened, shouldn't basic facts that we know to be true be accurately presented? And if they're not, what does that say about the other allegations, the other assertions, the other claims of inside knowledge and facts? All right. That's probably enough of me ranting and raving for today. I do want to request again from people, if you have topics that you'd like to have explored more on these podcasts, please let me know. If you're interested in greater detail about the Bravo Ranch events, look at Desperados. Go get a copy of Jaime Kirkendall's book. You can find it on Amazon or other places. And if you have any issue with finding and obtaining a copy of his book, write to me and I'll make sure you get one. I'll also plug my book, Someone Had to Die. We talk about Bravo Ranch. We talk a lot in there about Zavala. And we set the record straight on some of the issues that we discussed here. That too is on Amazon. And just let me say one more time, facts are important. Little facts are important. If we're still asking questions about the Camarena case, questions that deserve answers, questions about the investigation, questions about the prosecution, questions about post-prosecution allegations, then facts matter. And if you want to get the facts, look at Desperados. Look at Kirkendall's book. Look at my book. All right. That is going to wrap it up for today. Again, this is going to drop Friday afternoon. If you want a link in the future, that'll be in the newsletter. Let me know if you think this makes sense, the timing and stuff. And thank you again for joining me. And this is Cartels, Conspiracies, and Camarena for this week. Have a great week, everyone.